May, Strasser, Daly. My parents, Lewis and Rachel, were married August 13, 1927. She wore a green gown, which she used to tell me was understood at that time that if you wore green, you were ashamed to be seen. You see, Mom was considered an outcast in Delmas, Saskatchewan, because she didn't wear the widow's weeds and remarried much too soon after her first husband, Joe Lessard, had died. He died May 1, 1924. I was born May 15, 1928, 9 months and 2 days after my parents' marriage. I was born in Vollardville, in our log house. It burned down 5 years later. It was on the site of Jean and Editha Lessard's present farm home. I was born with a veil over my face, which meant being born with the placenta over your face. There was an old wives' tale that a baby born with this meant there was something special about the child. My mother always said one reason she married my father was to have me. When my father found out my mother was pregnant, he didn't like the idea of being a father and couldn't accept the responsibility. He also thought the shock of her being pregnant from the beginning of their marriage would be very difficult for the French, Canadian relatives to accept. He gave her money and sent her to Tisdale to see a doctor about terminating the pregnancy. Well, she went to Tisdale and went on a shopping spree, having a good time instead. Obviously, that's why I'm still here. My father left when I was about 2 years of age. I remember a Mr. Zuloff. I've seen a picture of him holding me as a baby, and somehow he figured in my very early years. He lived with us, most likely as our hired man. At that time, my Uncle Julius also lived with us and his wife Hetty, too. Uncle Julius was Dad's younger brother. He was a very fine musician and well-trained. He played the accordion and also built pipe organs. I was told about an accident I had when I was very young. When I was 9 months old, my older sister Clara bathed me, then sat me on the oven door. It was hot as my mother had opened it only minutes before. She was going to bake bread and was ready to put the loaves in, but because the oven was too hot, she opened the door to cool it off a bit. There I sat screaming. My sister was only 8 years older than I. My mother grabbed me, and the skin from my bottom was left on the oven door. Clara looked after me lots and was like a mother to me. She's always been very special to me. One of my earliest bedtime memories was the sound of Grandpa Elaine and my father tapping checkers as they played into the night. Then the once only time they both swore they killed a moose in our backyard, on the farm where Jean and Edith still live. They both were so sure each had killed it that they dug until they found both bullets in the same hole. That was the topic of many conversations for quite some time. Alma and Henry Elaine, whom I called Grandma and Grandpa, were my godparents, and every May 15th, I was summoned to Grandma's bedside to receive my annual handkerchief. She never forgot. As my father had left home when I was quite young, Grandpa Elaine took his place in my heart. He was always very special to me, and I loved to hear him sing as he came up behind me. Elle est frisée comme un mouton. The last time I heard this was in Saskatoon, when I was about 17 years old. I remember we lived in Hudson Bay one winter, and that spring we moved to the North Place. I'll never forget it. There was a high ridge on which we planned to build, and a creek on the lower land. We were living in some granaries down below the creek. One of those days in 1934, May 1st, Mom heard all these happy screams and laughter, and she couldn't understand what was going on. The creek had overflowed onto the meadow, and when she looked, she saw me flapping around in the water in my underpants. It was such a nice, warm spring day. I'll never forget this. And that was the spring I celebrated my 6th birthday. Also, at that time, we prepared to build a 2-story house on the high ridge, about 1/2 mile east of the granaries we were living in. A Belgian carpenter worked for us building the new house, which we lived in until 1938, when we moved down east. Mother had a great interest in school, obviously, with having 6 children. When I was a preschooler, a teacher named Nellie Bartoluk boarded with us. This was quite natural for Mom, for when she was a child, her parents had also boarded teachers in their home in the United States. One night during the time we boarded the teacher, Bertha Elaine came to spend the night with Clara, and when they began to take off their clothes for bed, my mother noticed lice on them. Their slips were full of these little crawling creatures, so she began to look closely at the rest of their clothes. They too were covered. She then combed their hair with special combs and kerosene. The girls had picked up the lice at school. Louis, my father, helped to build White Poplar School number 4269, where I started grade 1. I went with Therese and Joe, the only two going from our family by the time I started. We walked, as the school was only a half mile from home. I can't remember my first teacher's name, but I do recall one teacher, Mildred Baudouin, from Liasque, who was a very nice lady. I also had a man who was said to be a teacher, but later it was learned that he was not. Then there was Mr. Philippe Le Cellier, who was marvelous and was a real teacher. He was the one I remember the best. He taught me until we left in 1938. In the early part of 37, Clara and Louis planned their marriage. Preparations for the wedding seemed to take weeks. At the time, we had a hired man, Anton Buey. He built bookshelves, which divided the living room. The shelving unit had glass doors and fancy posts. When he finished building it, Anton stained it. The rest of us worked hard at getting the house ready, painting and cleaning. We also made lots and lots of jellied salads for the wedding supper. Now, while everyone was at the church, Anton stayed home. When we arrived back at the farm, we found Anton had drunk all the turpentine and picked off a lot of the beads on the wedding cake. The cake was a beautiful three-layered square with a little fence around each layer. Where each fence came together, there were silver beads, and these were the beads which Anton ate. We left Vollardville in April 1938. I was going to be 10 in May. We went down to Wynyard and visited a couple of guys who had worked for us for 2 winters earlier. They were brothers, and they lived near Wynyard. We also had a hired girl working for us. Eventually, she took a hairdressing course, and we met her again, later, in Tilsonburg. In those days, the government would give those people $5 a month to work as domestic hired help. If they stayed until April or May, the people keeping them would receive $5 a month. It was a way of putting young people to work, and the government would subsidize them. My mother took the $5 she received and gave it to the girl. That was how Marguerite, our housekeeper, paid for her hairdressing course. She had come from near Lesque. On our way down east, in the spring of 1938, we took an extended trip through Minnesota to meet all the relatives. That was the first time I'd ever seen a nun. We met Aunt Annie Lessard, an aunt of Clara's, Jean's, and the rest. Finally, we arrived in Tilsonburg. It was here that my sister, Therese, and I went to school in the basement of St. Mary's Church. The following year, Therese went to the Tilsonburg High School, which was a public high school. I continued at the separate school. I was promoted, and a year later, I was in grade 9, and Therese was in grade 10. By then, my brothers, Joe and Martin, had already quit school and were working. Mom was working in a tobacco factory in Tilsonburg. Therese and I were babysitting. We began our music lessons when we lived with Miss Thompson. She was crippled with some disease. I think it was polio. She had asked us to come, stay overnight, make her breakfast in the morning, and bring it up on a tray. For this, we received free piano lessons. Somehow, through the help of our parish priest, Father Joe O'Neill, we got a piano. We were able to practice, and that is how our music lessons started. By this time, Jean, our older brother, had already left to go back out west. On the way, he hopped a freight train and broke his leg somewhere in northern Ontario. He went back to his old haunts in Vollardville, to be close to Edithie, I guess. The year I began grade 10, Therese quit school and moved to Hamilton. I was in grade 10 until Christmas. Then I moved to Hamilton, where my mother had rented a place. By this time, Joe, Martin, and Therese were all working in the city. Joe said to my mother, "I would like May to take singing lessons," so he gave her $20, and this paid for my first 10 lessons at $2 a lesson, and that is how I began to study singing. Joe thought I had a talent because in Tilsonburg, I yodeled and sang cowboy songs with my good friend, Francis Gignac. Also, my science teacher, who had some interest in music and had traveled around the world, said that she could hear something in my voice, something which told her that I had a talent for singing, and she said I should study singing. Later, I studied at the Hamilton Conservatory. I took piano lessons at the convent, close by, from a nun. Sometime along the next year or so, my brother Martin married Floris Tarvis. I went to Cathedral High in Hamilton for the rest of grade 10 and grade 11. At the end of my grade 11, my mother was disillusioned with Hamilton, so she moved to Toronto. By this time, our country was at war, and Therese had joined up. Martin and Joe had either joined up or been called. They ended up in the Navy, Therese in the Air Force. My mother rented a two-room apartment right near the center of Toronto, half a block off Bloor and Yonge Streets. I rode my bicycle all along Highway No. 2 beside the lake to get from Hamilton to Toronto. I started grade 12 at St. Joseph's High School. I was there 1 year, first as a day scholar, then I boarded at the convent until the end of June. When school finished, I went out west to Hudson Bay. My mother moved out west because her brother, Albert, was not well. He was running a shoe store and a shoe repair business in Hudson Bay, Saskatchewan. He had asked her to come to help look after the store, so she went out at Christmas time. His son, Freddie, was a baby at the time. I was 16 the summer I helped in my uncle's store in Hudson Bay. Naturally, I wanted to look nice, but my hair was a mess. It was all frizzy and curly and looked like Uncle Fred's hair had looked when he came back from the lumber camps. Uncle Fred was mother's brother. My hair needed to be styled, so my mother took me to the hairdresser. How well I remember that day, my hair was cut and shaped, for it was the day of the elections in 1944, when the CCF got into power in Saskatchewan. Somehow during the war, Therese came home on leave, and we ended up spending the latter part of the summer at our cousin's near Duck Lake at Domremy, at Uncle Vita's. We spent a lot of time out in the fields with Raymond and Emile Bernier. That fall, my mother signed me up as a boarder at Sion in Saskatoon to finish my high school. Quite a bit of the work that year was repetitious for me, but I did take some new work. Grade 11 and 12 German and I started grade 12 geometry. I remained a boarder till Easter, when I discovered that my mother had moved to Saskatoon and was living with her sister and husband, Lucy and Fred Lessard. So I left as a boarder at Sion and completed the year as a day scholar. From there, I went to Teachers College, known then as Normal School. In the summer of 44, I learned I had won a silver medal in grade 10 for singing. I had received the highest mark in the province, something I had not expected. I finished summer school and signed a contract to teach at Duck Lake, but my mother thought I was a little too young at 17 to be going off on my own to teach, so she made me break my contract and enrolled me at the University of Saskatchewan. That's how I ended up at university, just when the war ended in 1945. It was there that I met Bernard, my future husband. Instead of continuing with my third year, I went to North Battleford and taught grade 2 at the convent. The following year, I moved back to Saskatoon, took a summer course in drama, and returned to university that fall. During the Thanksgiving weekend, on October 9, 1948, I became the wife of Bernard Daly. My mother, having totally disowned me, moved out and went to Hudson Bay. Shortly after, Clara arrived bringing the wedding cake which she had made. Mom was with her, and they were both all excited about the wedding. We had a beautiful wedding. At first, we lived in a wartime house, the same one Mom and I had lived in. Only now, Bernie and I lived in one side with my mother in the other side. During that winter, we moved to a basement apartment close to the university. The following spring, we moved back to Avenue J and lived in a very small house. By this time, Bernie was working nights for the Star Phoenix, and I was pregnant. In 1949, I got my Bachelor of Arts, my ARCT teaching, and I became a mother on August 28th, all in one summer. The following summer, we moved to 25th Street and lived in a two-story house. The second story was rented to two men. The house belonged to Bob Pravda's aunt. When she and her husband returned, we moved upstairs as the two renters had left. In the spring, we moved to Avenue F. That fall, Bernie was offered a job to run the North Battleford newspaper. So we moved again, but as places were hard to get in North Battleford, We ended up living with his parents. It was during this time that I lost a baby. Our next major move took us back to Saskatoon, where we bought a house with the help of St. Mary's Credit Union. A nice home, it was located on Avenue P, and we even had a garden there. Over the next few years, Mary Ann and Michael were born. Through these years, we had four babysitters, three of which became nuns. We were busy, both of us. Bernie was working at the Star Phoenix, and I was directing and singing in church choirs at St. Mary's and at the Newman Club on campus. One day in 1957, Bishop Klein called on us. He said he had been asked by the former bishop of Saskatoon, Bishop Pocock, who was then Archbishop of Winnipeg, to invite Bernie to accept the duties of press person for the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops, CCCB. We sold our house to a hockey star, Jerry Couture, who wanted it for his mother, and in the spring of 1958, we moved to Ottawa. Bernie, who had gone ahead to make arrangements for us, had the misfortune of having a ruptured appendix. We ended up spending Easter week at his cousin's home. There we were, with their three children, a husband recuperating from peritonitis, and our five small children on a cold, muddy Easter week. Finally, our furniture arrived, and we moved into a triplex house in the east end of Ottawa. This was only a temporary move. That summer, we had a house built. We had been introduced to Christian Family Movement by Grant and Vivian Maxwell in Saskatoon. Now, in Ottawa, we became active in a local group. Later, we replaced the Maxwells on the program writing committee for CFM. We served as chair couple for several years, and later were the Canadian representative couple in international CFM, which resulted in quite a bit of travel. From 1969, I became interested in a very special music education philosophy, and in 1972 founded the Codaly Institute of Canada. I was its executive director for 10 years. Later, I changed my direction and put my energy into a music school in Ottawa. Over the years, Bernie has been involved in a number of jobs, always with the church. Shortly after our move to Ottawa, the upcoming Vatican Council II was announced. The Canadian bishops asked Bernie if he would cover the council as a newspaper person. So, over the next few years, he traveled to Rome to attend all four sessions, a total of 1 year in all. I was fortunate to go in the third year as a pilgrim for 3 weeks. I met, among other people, the first woman observer at the Vatican Council, Mademoiselle Vinet. Once the council was over, Bernie returned home to Ottawa and to studies for his master's degree in sociology. He became the director of the newly established Family Life Bureau. Then he was again approached by the Canadian bishops, this time to ask if he would become a member of a six-man advisory team. Bernie accepted. Three of the team were English and three were French, while their educational backgrounds were of varied disciplines, that is, sociology, theology, among others. The team was responsible for preparing statements and at times criticizing the government's position on issues like birth control, abortion, and immigration policies. Since then, Bernie took an active part in Pope John Paul II's visit to Canada as the assistant coordinator, a task that took a year and a half. Here we shall let Bernie share with you. A few words here cannot add anything to the September days of Pope John Paul II's visit, which so gripped the lives of Canadians. I had been scheduled to spend the visit at a coordination center in Ottawa, but 2 days into the tour, was called to duties in the party traveling with the Pope. The work to be done was at the back of the plane, on the bus, in the motorcade, and behind the papal altars from St. John's to Ottawa, never very close to the papal stateroom or the various red carpets, but still part of that great adventure. A lot of the work had to do with seeing to it that translations of the Pope's talks got through on time to media centers, the host broadcaster, the simultaneous translators, the host diocese, and the special service for people with hearing impairments. This afforded a privileged opportunity to work with and get to know a number of the Pope's personal staff, who put in extremely long, hard hours. And there was a never-to-be-repeated close-up view of some 2 million Canadians in festive excitement, in rain, fog, wind, and under a brilliant sun. One lasting memory is of how gently they touched, Pope and people, as they reached out to each other. Whereas in the planning stage, there had been much pushing, shoving, grasping, and striving for more time and space, during the actual visit, this side of us seemed to yield to generosity, and above all, gentleness. There was crowd control, but also the crowds themselves were controlled, considerate, convivial. And they and Pope John Paul II exchanged thousands of tender touches. Of course, there was no chance to get to know him personally, but one couldn't work and live in that setting without gaining some impressions of him as a person. First among these is of his controlled, disciplined sense of presence. When he knelt before the Blessed Sacrament, so undistracted was his prayerfulness that crowded cathedrals echoing with hand-clapping and bustling fell absolutely silent, as if a power cord had been unplugged. A sick or elderly person felt he saw only them when they chatted. It must only be by being so attentive to what he is doing at the time, be it his work, prayer, rest, or meals, that he is able to maintain such a pace. As part of all the arrangements, the Canadian bishops chartered the plane to carry the Pope, his party, and some international journalists back to Rome. There was room for a few others to have the honor of going along, among them the two of us. Following the papal visit, Bernie took on new responsibilities, that of CCCB Assistant General Secretary, English Sector. This is quite an honor, as it is the first time a layperson has been given the opportunity to serve in this capacity. As well, Bernie presently serves on the Board of Directors of St. Thomas More College in Saskatoon, which requires that he attend a yearly board meeting. He still has 6 months sabbatical coming, and, in the not-so-distant future, the possibility of retirement. We presently reside at Wilson's Corners, Quebec, and have recently renovated our little home, more than doubling the original floor space. We traveled to Grenada, Saskatoon, and other points west in 1985. We each enjoy good health amid the ordinary and extraordinary events with family, friends, and colleagues, whether it be at home, work, or simply while relaxing. Our family has grown. They are Tom and Robin, who live in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia with their children, Jesse, Brennan, and twins, Elinid and Kieran, born July 2, 1986, Pat with her husband, Giorgio Grappolini, and children. John, Michelle, Louisa, and Julia live in Sherwood Park, Alberta, where Giorgio is employed in the oil industry. Mary Ann and Joe Burke live in Ottawa, Ontario, with their three children, Thomasina, Hannah, and Moira. Michael married Lisa Slinkard, and they are living in California. He has a son, Patrick. Teresa is a member of Canada's Armed Forces and lives in Trenton, Ontario, with daughter, Tiana. Timothy is employed out west. In 1974, Rachel Strasser received a plaque from the Saskatchewan Wheat Pool on behalf of her first husband, Joe Lessard, who was an original member in 1924. The plaque was given to members, 1924 to 1974, 50 years.